Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Alien vs. Predator Galaxy podcast. This regular host, Aaron Percival, aka Corporal Hicks, and joining me as always are
Adam Zeller, aka Ridgetop,
Eric Adams, aka Xenomorphine.
And I'm already cringing internally because this episode is going to be no editing. It will only be some post-production automation. Oh, you fucking dickhead.
Oh, no.
Post-production automation.
I did that on purpose.
I had Zella's breathing, and then I had your lip smacking within the first 10 seconds, and I'm already like, oh, for fuck's sake. So, yes, obviously, because this one is, you know, a time-sensitive discussion, throwing this one up pretty much no editing. This is episode 180, and we're a bunch of, early 20s space salvagers discussing the Alien Romulus.
Thank God it's not that. Trailer.
You know, I'm still genuinely surprised that Prometheus hasn't been rebranded Alien Prometheus.
I don't know. I don't know about that. Although I have been seeing a number of defenses recently of Prometheus and Covenant on Twitter. Maybe they're being reevaluated.
Well, that's something Steve Apple said as well. I mean, they're very different to the main series, and you know, we had like spin-off groups on Facebook and the various socials and stuff like that. But Steve Aspel, you know, the big head honcho at studios, commented on the sort of comments they'd been seeing yesterday after the trailer release about, you know, how people have been reevaluating in quotation marks, you know, Prometheus and Covenant and stuff like that, which is funny.
I'm like, no, it's not. It's bad.
I still love Covenant. I still really love Covenant for the first two acts. But we are obviously talking the Romulus teaser trailer. And we're also going to lay it out there first. We're not talking about the spoilers, the leaks, or anything like that. Not in a specific sense, but we might mention it in a broad impressions. But no details, nothing like that. Because apparently we hate spoilers on the internet now, so we're not gonna talk about that. I don't want to wind myself up, and I also don't want to start talking about the background politics of all this bullshit and have to do work editing things. So broadest terms only.
Okay, just to clarify, because there's still a lot of comments I'm seeing on YouTube and elsewhere. This is the film. There is still a TV show in production. They're both sort of concurrent projects. This is the film one. This, the other thing is still yet to
filthy come casuals. Out. God. How can they not know the difference between Noah Hawley's thing and Fede Alvarez's?
But this is the movie that's going to come out. Yeah.
So it's this bit of, and not just the trailer came out. You know, we had the teaser poster. And we also had a lot of interviews, I say a lot, like four or five interviews with Fede Alvarez, discussing the trailer, discussing the film and various bits and pieces to do with it, which is exciting. I'm excited. But that's just me. How about you guys? Eric, how are you, how are you feeling about the trailer?
Go to Adam first, because I'm curious to see what Adam's view of this is. I haven't heard anything.
I'm also excited. Hey, it's always an exciting time when the first teaser drops, even with Covenant. I was hyped with that teaser. Prometheus teaser needs no introduction, of course. It was like one of the best trailers of all time. But
that was a whole saga unto itself as well, you know, leading up to the release with all the leaks from the survey website and everything like that.
So this did not have, I can't remember if Prometheus had any viral teasing before the trailer, but this had like nothing. And everyone was just waiting for something
to drop. That is a lie.
Well, a clapboard, okay, from last summer.
No, I meant Fede's very, very clever little tease.
Oh, okay. So, the day before the teaser trailer dropped, we had a black image that said tomorrow. But if you pumped up the brightness, you could see a xenomorph looking right at you. So that was pretty cool. But I think that the teaser trailer was great. I think it was very effective, very spooky. should we just watch it? You want to just watch it and then we can talk about it?
Yeah, sure. Okay. I'm going to leave this in for the audio version as well. Once I've unmuted it and started it. There we go. Okay.
Run.
Yeah,
fucking love it. Fucking love it.
Very effective. Very effective teaser. You know, sometimes you have the teasers like the first AVP where it just shows you the tiniest of glances, but this like it showed a lot. But it was also still pretty short. We only see one shot of the adult xenomorph. All those face huggers just mobbing down the corridor was pretty cool. Pulsating like freaky music was good. Yeah, it was just an awesome teaser.
Go on then, Eric.
Right. My view of this commercial here, this trailer, is this shows, and just to qualify my view, I've always said, like, hope for the best, prepare for the worst, especially with a view to what Prometheus gave us, because however you like it, the commercial was unfortunately nothing like the end result. But this was what I was hoping to see from this director, based on what we've seen in Evil Dead, and especially Don't Breathe. I would say Don't Breathe is the one to see in terms of what he would do with an alien film. We got not just the authenticity with set design and the color palette too, and the lighting. Those are two key things from an alien film. But here we got very much a sense of the tension, which I'm really hoping to see here. And also, there are some hints of bringing back the disturbing psychosexual stuff, which has been absent in my view since 1986. The last time we had that was probably Ripley and Newt with a facehugger attack. Ironically, facehuggers here. I've wanted to see a mass facehugger attack in an alien film for a long while, and we are finally getting it here. Yeah, as a commercial, this worked for me. I do think the initial thing where it sweeps across and we see the blood on the cryotube, I suspect because of the way it was filmed, I think that was done especially for the advert. I don't know, but it reminded me a lot of the AVP 2010 commercial for the game, where you just showed a lot of Weyland Yutani stuff and there was blood splatter over the, you know, the happy 1950s family-friendly thing saying, building better worlds. It reminded me a lot of that in a good way because I liked that commercial. Yeah, this did what it's meant to. It's generated hype, a lot of good word of mouth, and I'm fully behind this. If this is what the film is like, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping this is will do for Alien what Prey did for Predator. That's my that's what I'm getting from this. It's going back to the build tension, make it a chase, make it about the elements of the script which made Alien what it was. And if they do bring back that kind of disturbing Lambert type stuff in this, all the better, because that is what makes Alien distinct from all the other movie monsters out there, and we've been lacking that. Make the Alien disturbing again.
I thought you were going to do the MAGA thing there.
But yeah, it's that kind of thing. I'm sure somebody will make that into a meme, make the alien disturbing again.
So I have been, again, talking broadest terms, all the leaks have me excited.
Yes.
You know, a lot of what we've heard of the leaks are things that are very much up my street as an Alien fan, as a person, as a movie fan, all that kind of stuff. So the question for me then comes down to execution. And, you know, and this teaser trailer is our first look at that execution. And as a teaser trailer, this is bang on. You know, we say teaser, it's supposed to tease, it's supposed to incite excitement, it's supposed to give you a taste of what's in store for you. And, you know, I think there's an art in, there's an art, trailer editing is an art unto itself.
It is.
The original Alien trailer, teaser trailer, bang on. You know, Prometheus, say what we want about the actual film, that first Prometheus teaser trailer was an absolute banger as well. This is as well. You know, when we had Covenant's first trailer, that thing fucking spoiled like the majority of the deaths in the film. And you know, a lot of, did it really spoil the narrative? I can't remember, but it certainly spoiled a lot of the deaths in the film. When it came to this, you know, that first pan over this gorgeous Nostromo-esque Sevastopol looking set, you know, corridor with the alien sirens blaring and this voiceover, this panicked voiceover with, you know, multiple different characters, and it pans over the blood in the cryo tube. I was like, this is fucking perfect. This is brilliant. This is a fantastic little tease. And I scrolled to the bottom to check how much longer was left, thinking it was going to be this nice little 30-second long teaser trailer. Just to find there was another half to it. I would have been happy with if it had cut there, to be honest, because I think that was a very good tease. But then what we got with the rest of it was perfect, because it was so much out of context, but still alien and very interesting, you know, sort of shots. I could have done without the facehugger leaping on Eileen Wu, you know, because that's potential spoiler death territory there. But like, you know, getting the creature shots, getting the set, the fucking set design and the production design is wonderful. You know, it teases the new, I say new, the old pulse rifle, of course. You know, perfect teaser trailer, in my opinion. And I am very fucking excited. Very excited after this one. It's certainly done its job. And I can't wait to hopefully see more on Alien Day.
Yeah,
it's been making the rounds too. Like, I think it's number one trending trailer on YouTube right now. Last time I looked, it had about 7 million views, and that was just on the 20th Century Studios channel. So yeah, it's cool to see all this excitement online for this. And I pretty much agree with everything both of you said. It was just very effective. It felt very Evil Dead 2013 in terms of that just really dark, foreboding vibe, but those sets looked straight out of something from the original Alien or Alien Isolation. Interestingly enough, the ship, someone on Twitter who goes by the Space Shipper discovered the name.
It was on our boards.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, the guy he credits is Nightmare Asylum.
Oh, gotcha. So it's the Corbalon 4, which I guess is another Conrad name. So
yes, he was in the Nostromo novel.
Cool.
It was a character in Nostromo.
We see this little scavenger ship approaching the station with this really cool like belt of the planet, like ring, I guess.
Yeah, very Saturn-esque.
Wasn't there a ring around the LV-426?
Kalpamos.
The gas giant there was, yeah. But they were landing on the moon.
Maybe it's that area, possibly.
Or maybe it's just evocative visually. I mean, there is a lot in the trailer that is visually evocative of the rest of the films, whether that's in design language, fitting into the universe, or straight up visual reference to a scene from Aliens.
What we've got here is ironically, as a whole, it's actually very much how I envisage when we used to talk about Neil Blomkamp's possible Alien 5, the way this is shot and lit is very much in keeping with how I visualize that might be. But the key part for this as a trailer is, as you mentioned, about the editing. Now, if the film is edited like this, fantastic. But one of the reasons this hits so well is because it's kind of mirroring how Alien itself was. You had that long sweeping shot, but then you get that hint of blood and it's full-on blood. It doesn't look at all fake or CGI. That looks like how blood would drench something. and then it hits, and then you get those quick shots, quick shots, quick shots. And there's even a very interesting hint of zero G, which Aaron and me have often talked about.
We'll start skipping through the trailer.
Yeah,
and but we'll start talking about the specific moments.
The other interesting thing about this, which really gave me hope, is that in one of the interviews that the director has given, he did say specifically about this, I really tried to show the minimal amount. And he says he hates it when adverts give plot points away. So I'm hoping that all the stuff we get, he also said that none of his favorite shots are in this, which is also very interesting. Whatever we have seen here is they're not the money shots, which is fantastic. I'm hoping that all the commercial stuff we get is as ambiguous in nature as this is, where you go, oh, I want to see more, but it doesn't give anything away, which is so difficult these days. If they keep that up, it's going to be a very successful marketing campaign. And I'd like to find out who edited this advert, because I don't know if he did the advert, but he would have given that like a green light to it. But yeah, hats off to whoever did the editing for this, because this is really good editing.
Yeah. Again, just very effective teaser. Responding to what you said about that first shot, Eric, where it slowly goes down the corridor and we see the blood in the cryotubes.
Yeah.
From what I've been told, that's in the film. It's just they added extra background audio that's not part of that scene for the teaser. But yeah, it's kind of an interesting position, because I think you and Aaron have both dived into spoilers, whereas I've been trying to avoid them. We'll see how successful I am with that.
Not because I want to, but because, you know, moderating the message boards, it's a hazard of the...
So, you know, that's one of the things as well.
Yeah, I'd rather not. But...
I wouldn't police the release of spoilers, but... To me, it's very important that what we report on is accurate and legit. I very much don't want to share misinformation or baseless rumors. So I have to, where I can, I do have to sort of spoil myself, which is unfortunate in its own way. But damn, I still get excited regardless. And like I said earlier, you know, it's the execution then that then comes afterwards that is still fucking exciting. But let's start digging in then. Let's talk about the what was it, the Korriban, did we say?
Yeah,
Adam.
Four, I think. Korriban four, I think. Yeah, cool little cargo ship. We can see these clamps on the underside that are attached to this orange container. It looks like the cockpit is on the upper right hand side at the rear of the ship. Kind of reminds me of those cargo lifts we saw in both Covenant and Aliens Fireteam Elite, and we can see the boarding door right on the front of the ship.
Yeah. It's a nice angled sort of hull to it as well. It gives a lot of Nostromo design language, which is also cool.
I assume this...
How good it is to see those windows with slits in an Alien film again. I really miss those. See a lot of those in this.
I assume this light coming through those windows there, that's probably them approaching the station. Yeah.
That's a good shout. But I mean, this first shot of the pullback through the corridor, you know, that just screams Alien to me, whether it, you know, it's the original production design and set design of the Nostromo, or, you know, we associate a lot of it with Isolation now as well, because Isolation really took what was in the first film and expanded it. You know, it made a city in space out of those original designs. So the two are forever sort of linked in my mind now. And just this little pullback, and then the sirens start going. I was fucking grinning like a fool when I watched it the first time.
I have to say, I don't remember if this was in Isolation. If it wasn't, I really like it as an addition. You've got these monitors on the sides. I really, because they've got, it's clearly like slightly malfunctioning video, and you see
with the VHS scanner. Right? Yeah.
But also, if you'll notice, it's that same sort of blue and black color palette on them as you got with the Colonial Marine sort of helmet cameras. And on the dropship, as they're sort of surveying Hadley's Hope, and that is it's not about member berries. It's just about getting the setting authentic. Yeah, that feels like something you would see as like a monitoring station for engineering crew and stuff. They would have these little monitors as you go down the corridors. It's not just visually satisfying, but it's always about form follows function. So it's just nice to see that kind of stuff there as well, these little innovations.
I don't consider this kind of stuff member berries. No, I'll be honest. I mean, obviously the trailer ends with a member berry, let's be honest. But this is visual continuity. This is world continuity. Yeah. You know, I always joke, you know, Adam, you probably remember, you know, whenever we're doing anything about a game or anything like that, and it calls back to the Nostromo look or it calls back to the Hadley's Hope look, you know, I make a joke about Space IKEA and all these sort of places buying the same, you know, prefabricated pop-up colonies from Space IKEA. And I totally see that as being a thing in the future. So, you know, all these kind of places sharing similar architecture, similar visual look to it, you know, is again, another form of realism to me. I've been in, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast, you know, I work at a prison and I've been in multiple different prisons. And a bunch look the same, and then a bunch don't. You know, like the Victorian stuff looks older. But like the newer sort of stuff, especially if they're using like the same contractor, architecture companies, whatever, you know, there's a lot of similarities between the way they look. So I totally see this as being realistic, and I love it. And it already sets the trailer off in a good moment, and it makes me feel good about the film's production design straight away.
Yeah, and you've got a lot of nice use of smoke as well in there, which reminds me of Nostromo too.
Those old steamy spaceships. But yeah, this corridor is very much evocative of the first Alien. And it's interesting, Fede Alvarez was talking about its setting in a recent interview between Alien and Aliens. And apparently there are two modules of this station. And one is older, more Alien feeling, and the other is newer, more Aliens feeling. Romulus being the newer one, and Remus, I assume, is this hallway right here. We're seeing part of that.
Is that right? Is Romulus the old one?
I think Romulus is the new one, and Remus is the old one.
I thought it was the other way around, actually.
That's
a bit, I could be wrong. The station itself is called the Renaissance Station. And it's funny, you know, you're talking about the one being older looking than the other. And Fede talked about in one of the interviews that old fan theory around the differences between the Prometheus aesthetic and the Nostromo aesthetic. You know, that old argument of, yeah, but Alien's so retro looking, it's lo-fi sci-fi, and then Prometheus rolls around with holograms and fucking fancy pants everything. And I think a lot of the, you know, fan theory is, yeah, but it's the fucking scientific flagship of this, you know, immensely wealthy company. Of course it's going to look better than a piece of shit tug. And Fede talked about that, comparing it between truckers and someone rolling around in a Tesla. And I was like, yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, Fede. And I like to see him reference that. I feel like he's actually quite a clued up fan. And from what I've talked, you know, behind off the book stuff, you know, people have found him to be very clued up on his knowledge and stuff like that, which is exciting to hear. All these interviews I've heard this last day or so after the trailer's release, I'm like, I am so on board with this man. I'm just, everything that coming out of his mouth is, you know, is pleasing the nerd inside me, is pleasing the alien nerd here. And I'm very, very excited to hear more from him. So I really like the pan to the blood as well. Although, you know, this has been edited for some territories.
I'm wondering if these are,
I can believe that,
resurrection Italy type smuggling, you know, pods here or something. So they kind of look like that.
I don't think they look like resurrections. I mean, they look like a different style.
I mean, yeah, different visual aesthetic, but you know what I mean? Like mobile pod carriers or something. That's, I don't know. That's the impression.
I didn't,
doesn't look like a cryosleep chamber to me.
But that's again, another one of the cool things of the film is the franchise is these different styles of like,
yeah.
Cryos.
I mean, it doesn't. I'd have to look at the Alien Resurrection one. I don't remember what they looked like.
But
here we go.
Majority of the action in the trailer is facehugger action.
So cool.
I mean, how? Yeah. I would never expect that. you know, for the facehuggers to have such a prominent role in the action. And it's exciting to me because when I saw this, my first thought was the comic Berserker or slash Frenzy, as it was republished as. If you remember that one, gents.
It's been too long since I've read that, but it reminded me of...
There's a very iconic cover from that series of face, like somebody opening like a drawer event and facehuggers storming out. So I immediately add vibes of that. And I find it refreshing because outside of Aliens, maybe, you know, when we have Burke spilling the facehuggers in that little room, you know, we have that nice scene of a bit of cat and mouse between Ripley and Newt. And two facehuggers in there, we don't really get to see the facehuggers do much. You know, little bits of the flashbacks, not flashbacks, little bits of like the opening sequence in Alien 3. I do like that shot in the theatrical cut where you see the facehugger in the EEV, you know, when Spike's there. But otherwise, yeah, you really don't get to see them do much other than, you know, wiggle out of an egg. So...
In fairness, they are a little bit on the single-minded side.
I know, but as a agree, narrative...
Yes, I've often wanted to see a facehugger sort of need to do problem-solving or something, because we know what it would like to do, but there's lots of interesting things you could do with them.
Still, just a facehugger chase. Like, I don't think we've really seen that in the movies before. Oh, honestly, nice. It kind of reminded me of that opening of the recent video game, Aliens Dark Descent, where you had that mob of facehuggers just swarm a whole station.
It needs to be said that, in fairness to Covenant, we did get some nice face hugger shots of it scrabbling around and stuff.
I didn't like those moments in Covenant. I didn't think it was portrayed very well, I'll be honest. But like here, I think especially, I mean, there's two instances of it, the trailer is them busting through glass. Mm. And, you know, you think back to Alien.
Kane, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So to actually see them... Smashes. Smash their way through glass and stuff like that. And we get a nice little look at the design, the interpretation here.
Super face hugger coloring.
It does. Yes. That was immediately
black
my thought. It's
and yellow
and like a dead wasp. A little bit of red, you know, that kind of look to it as well. Obviously if you're watching the video, you can't see it here. I'm not zoomed in, but there's good. There's some good sort of screen caps of it online where you can get a really good look at the colouring. And it very much looks like a queen facehugger. And I don't expect it to, I'll be honest, because we know that Ridley hates the queen. You know, it's been said in the past that in Ridley's mind, the queen does not exist in his...
Has he said that outright? He doesn't like...
Well, it's been relayed in...
Because he praised aliens in the illustrated screenplay.
He did, but if you remember back to... It was Ian Nathan, if you remember who Ian Nathan is. He wrote Alien Vault, and he's currently directing Aliens Expanded, that fan-produced, fan-funded... documentary. And he produced the unfortunate sparse content that was behind the scenes for Covenant. And he relayed that this is what he was told when he was on set with the creature effects guys. And he's looking around for the queen going, what about the queen? And, you know, odd studios or odd creatures. I forget what the amalgamated name was. They said to him, don't mention the queen. Doesn't exist, which is, you know, it's kind of a relief in some way, because it could potentially be another member berry if it's not used in a unique or different way. But I like to think there's going to be something special about these facehuggers.
Giger liked it, though. Giger enjoyed the queen, but it's been a while since we've seen the queen on film. Gosh, when was the last time? I guess AVP. Yeah. So I think she's due for a return sometime. And honestly, even with Isolation, like, I mean, you have to think there had to have been a queen somewhere on the station. And there was idea for that. They just ended up not going with it. And so
it
feels like
queen... They said they didn't want to use the queen or show the queen because players would expect to have to interact with it and stuff like that. There is a queen on Sevastopol, but we don't see it.
it feels like the Queen has always been in a very Aliens kind of vibe and context. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be cool to see her kind of retroactively made more Alien style, you know? So I still hope
as long as there's room, she'll just set up shop wherever she can. Depends if there's a... She's not going to be in one of these little corridors, is she?
Well,
yeah. It's also nice to see that color of red where they're emerging from. It's very Medlab-esque. It's the same red tone.
Also, using the flare to attract Alien there, that's straight out of Alien Isolation.
Yeah. And Jurassic Park.
Of course. And Jurassic World. So here we get some strange vibes off this character, don't you?
Yeah.
So this is David Johnson, I believe the actor's name is.
Fairly sure this ironically is the android character.
Yeah. So, I mean, you get that off the stance. You get that off the vibe here, don't you? Yeah. And I think it was one of the outlets, you know, when they were interviewing FedEx, they were like, so he's an android, right? And FedEx was like, you got that from the trailer, really? And it's like, we can get that from the stance. I'm very curious to see how they handle, you know, the synthetics in this. Because we know, again, from the interviews, and this is something I'm really, really curious about, actually, and I quite like the theme of it, is there's a lot of sibling pairing going off in the film. So he is, in some ways, a sibling to one of the characters, must be. So I'm very curious to see how that dynamic is portrayed in here.
You chose a particularly nasty shot to pause on here.
I didn't mean to.
This confirmed to me. This is what I said in Evil.
So for Dead, audio listeners, describe.
Describe. Okay. This is the scene with it's like a female character having what is, to me, obviously a face hugger ovipositor being slid out of her mouth, being removed. But it's a sort of very, it's not gratuitous, but it is, it's in
graphic.
Sort of almost, yeah, but it's in silhouette, which I find is an interesting choice. If you look at his this is one of the things I thought, oh, there's an interesting choice of director, because in Evil Dead, you have the tree scene, in Don't Breathe.
I forgot about that. I forgot about the tree.
But it's a lot more, sort of, it's not, again, it's not glorifying. It's very much for the horror moment in it.
The tree in the original was ridiculous. I don't like the original The Evil Dead. I don't.
He made it horrifying.
It made it disgusting, also, and disturbing, and so wrong. Yeah. It's not played for laughs in the remake.
Not at all. And it's also the victim's reaction to it as well. It's very much played up for that. And in Don't Breathe, that there is, without spoiling it, there is another scene which plays heavily on the potential for involuntary impregnation.
Mm-hmm.
So my hope was, okay, this is a doctor who knows how to handle that kind of material. And here we get a glimpse of him knowing how to play on those sort of Giger-esque themes.
Well,
yes,
thinking about that as well.
Artwork, isn't it?
So I'd completely forgot that particular artwork, but one of the members on our board posted a picture of one of Giger's pieces, where it is this, you know, very Giger-esque tube coming out or into a feminine mouth. Yeah, yes. And I was like, "Yep, okay, that is obviously a reference here as well," and it's quite clearly. It's hard to tell in motion, but when you freeze frame this, it is quite clearly a face hugger being pulled off of somebody.
Because there's
you can see the legs. Yes.
Maybe a pouch, yeah.
I never took the ovipositor to probably be that wide, you know, based on previous creature works. But it works, because I imagine it probably just inflates.
It would expand, because it would need to pump something down. That is probably...
And effectively choke.
Yeah, it's engorged, so to speak, and it is because it is a muscular pump. And we saw it, you could see it in the x-rays in the original Alien. You see it down Kane's throat and it's full on. So I imagine at this point, it's getting ready. What's interesting here is that you don't get what happened in Aliens when Hicks and Ripley were working together and it was sort of straining all over. It looks weirdly relaxed, so I'm wondering if they've somehow paralyzed the face hugger while they're doing it. That could be an interesting way. Yeah, although you have to wonder, you know, the medical reports, they killed them taking it off. Their face is unmarked, so this implies they're going to do something interesting with this extraction. So that in itself, it's not spoiling details, but clearly, unless they've ignored that, and I don't think he's the kind of guy to ignore something as well known as that, they kill you taking it off. This implies something interesting is going to happen with facehugger extraction. Of course, you don't know if it's done its job either. So
I mean, it could also just be as simple as it died relaxed on the face instead of screwing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's whatever it is, it's an interesting shot. And I think the purpose of it is to remind us, hey, we're not going to hold back in this film.
Yeah.
We're going to show stuff which makes the alien alien. And that's so refreshing to me. Not because I'm looking forward to going, yeah, let's do some hentai. But it's making me think this is a director who knows image composition. There are a ton of shots throughout this entire trailer which have great image composition. And he knows how to handle those themes to make them disturbing. So this is that little hint of we're going to do some things you won't like to sleep afterwards kind of thing. And I'm looking forward to that.
Well, both Evil Dead and Don't Breathe were very up close, visceral, brutal, you know. So it makes sense that kind of style would be at play here.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And it's one of the things that I've always found appealing about Fede being attached to this film. You know, I do think Don't Breathe and Evil Dead are very intense. And that's the thing I like the most, very intense films. And I'd very much like to have nightmares about Alien again. So I'm curious to see how he pulls that off.
You want to have reasons to sleep on your front again. Bring those childhood memories back.
You know it.
Yeah.
And Rob says in the chat, one of our patrons watching this live, the perspective looks odd. Could it be a giant facehugger?
I mean, it doesn't. If you're talking about a super facehugger, that was exoskeletal. These don't look exoskeletal. But then again,
they only really share the color palette.
Yeah, this because it's never been in the assembly cut, which isn't.
But then again, the legs do look quite long.
Yeah, in the assembly cut, it's kind of seen far away. It could be missed. And you see the X-ray shot on Ripley's face. It's a normal facehugger. And then we have not had a definitive canon queen facehugger. So maybe this could be a way of showing us a queen facehugger. But it could be something else. I have often said maybe what the Nostromo crew found in the derelict was like that was the phase one compartment, and there might be other wild strains of the alien.
Well,
this could be
to Adam's chagrin and to deviate quite wildly already and go off topic.
I do know what you're about to say here, but.
Well, do you actually? So John Spates, you know, the pre-Prometheus scripts, when it was a more overtly alien film and it said alien in the fucking title, you know, one of the things in the Alien Engineers draft, I think it was, had so many compartments in the cargo hold. I can't remember. I mean, he said it was like 8 or something like that. And this particular hold contained this particular variation of the alien, which is, of course, the traditional alien that we had in Alien. Adam, you chuckled. Was that what you were thinking?
I didn't know what you were about to say. I thought you were saying, well, we do know these facehuggers are a little different because of some things that have come out with the barbs and stuff. But now, as far as the this shot here, we've lingered on for too long. I think he's just a thick boy, man. I think that's all.
Is it disturbing you, Adam? Do you not like being on this one? I thought you liked your gay stuff.
Yeah, he's the Requiem fan.
You like gratuitous.
Yeah, fair point. Fair point.
Come on, then.
No, I like that part in Requiem. It was in theme to Alien. It just didn't stick with canon. But yeah, it's interesting as a shot.
So
it's surprised they put it in here.
Zero-G action going on.
A couple of seconds of somebody floating in zero-G. I fucking hope there is a nice, good action sequence in zero-G because, as Eric mentioned when we started earlier, you know, that's something that was in Peter Briggs's second draft of AVP, this elusive second draft that is still not any in my hands. And I want it to be in my hands. But yeah, opens with zero-G combat between the alien and the predators. So to actually see, not necessarily that, but potentially see something in this film around zero-G and the aliens, sign me the fuck up.
It doesn't even have to be an adult alien. It could be, you know, a facehugger or something, sort of pushing it off by its tail. And there's this weird thing because you're then at the same speed one of those is. They've got to rely on the same pushing themselves off. And that's actually something I put in my RPG scenario. I put a potential for zero G and I thought, right, how do I do this with the mechanics? So to see a possibility of it having here fills me with a lot of how they're going to handle this. And with that said, it's probably not going to feature any alien whatsoever. It's going to be something that's just 5 seconds. But yeah, I'm like, from my mind, initially, like first thing I saw that, I thought, could this finally, it might be like in the Peter Briggs script. I think in that one, it was referred to as, you see what happens with the blood in zero gravity, because it's fluid. Fluid doesn't act like fluid does here. It goes into like spheres. If you ever look at astronaut videos where they're drinking and stuff, they sort of pour it out in the air, it goes into a sphere, and it that could be very, very crazy.
I really want to see some zero G acid blood mayhem. And to be fair, I would want it to be adults. I'll be honest. I love any opportunity to see the grace of the alien. You know, one of my favorite moments of recent history is the introduction of, well, no, it's not the introduction, the second introduction of Stompy in Isolation, when you see him come out of the vent in the San Cristobal, and just the way it unfurls, it's mesmerizing is the word I describe it as. And I feel like you could really get some sort of stuff like that in a zero G situation. Yeah. And
you replicate, I mean, this the sliver.
This is obviously my fan wank fantasies of the situation, but I've just, the potential for zero G shenanigans is quite exciting to me.
Yeah. And they replicated that for the Dead by Daylight thing, of course.
Indeed. And we've got a few little bits of shots of what looks like a character in, I guess, cockpit, maybe. It looks like a window through there. Maybe it's the cockpit of the shuttle, because the next scene then goes to the shuttle sort of exploding off the station. But
did
again,
you
more
also notice the Nostromo warning symbols at the
yes.
top? They're straight so out the Nostromo.
We've got a Ron Cobb semiotic straight away. And, you know, that's something else Isolation did quite liberally and quite well, was signage within Sevastopol. And I love seeing it here. It's like the Purina kind of looking semiotics there. And what looks a little bit like maybe a coffee station kind of thing. But, you know, not much too much to say on this one at the minute. But I'm liking a lot. We've seen a lot of orange in the trailer. I'm actually quite liking this palette.
Yeah, the ship is just being rocked here from an explosion.
Almost looks like a potentially fuel jet.
Looks like an explosion, that does, but...
And more facehugger action as well. Yeah, I really wish we hadn't have seen who got jumped on.
Yeah, they could have cut it here. But, I mean, it's interesting where, you know, you got that inertia of the person literally being pushed back with the force of it.
So. And it is nice, again, to see the facehuggers actually seem threatening and fearsome. And the speed and the movement and stuff like that here.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of fans who said, it wasn't the adult aliens that scared them. They've always had nightmares about the facehuggers because it's that primal,
it's arachnophobia.
Tarantula. Yeah, yeah, it's a tarantula with a reptilian tail. That is a scary thing to face. And if it's trying to impregnate you, that's, yeah, I'm glad we're getting
it. For a long time, I mean, at the minute, as a 30-something, I don't even know how old I am, as a 30-something-year-old bloke, you know, the only scene I look away from when I'm watching the alien films now is Newt's autopsy. Can't stand it. But like 10 years ago, a little bit more, I still used to have to look away when the facehugger jumped out at Kane. You know, that scene used to still make me jump out of my skin.
It's and that screech.
It doesn't now, but, you know, that fear of the facehugger, you know, we were saying earlier about my nightmares, sleeping face down. So the chest burster couldn't come out. It's fear of the life cycle. And that little fucking bastard, those facehuggers, you know, they're the things that start it off. And there's primal fear in that. And I love the prominence of them in this trailer, because just on that alone, you know, again, shows freshness to me. And Sarah is also watching in the chat. She points out that in that previous scene, there is a character stood by the door, seemingly doing nothing. Although, to be fair, the facehuggers are moving fast in that.
It Maybe like one this. Just got through or something. Well, no, because there's someone else on the ground over there. By
yeah,
the
they're moving. There's also a smear on the window. So it's,
somebody's been injured.
Yeah. Coming up here, we have the nostalgia bait shot.
This is the, yeah, I would call this the only member berry shot in the trailer. And
her short sleeves remind me a little bit of, and her hair remind me a little bit of Ripley Apes thing, just in silhouette there, but with a basketball like thing at the top.
I don't know how I feel about this scene.
It's even got the LED, the red LED ammo readout on the side.
Well, just to talk about scene composition and it obviously being a very clear reference to Ripley coming out of the elevator in Aliens. Homages are a difficult thing, I think. We were talking earlier about this being a lot of this being visual continuity. You know, I don't consider that homage. That's world building. This, I struggle with it a little bit. You know, it's the very obvious references that pull me out of films that I tend to disagree with in homages. So it's normally dialogue for me. Nothing pisses me off more than hearing "get to the chopper" or, you know, some variation of that. If it's in, you know, if it's in some foreign language, like I think Nikolai does in Predators, I think that's cute. It doesn't pull me out. I learn about it later. That's fine. I don't think we've really seen many visual homages.
Not one dipping bird.
Well, no, I mean, yeah,
that'll be in the movie.
in the other films, I wouldn't really count the dipping birds, I'll be honest, because that's background. But like, can you think of any other moments in Requiem that are the best hits compilation sort of like film where it directly referenced a move like this? I can't think.
I mean, there's one shot Predators. In AVPR where it's directly taken from
the facehuggers in jumping. Yeah, okay.
Well, no, T2 3D, the Universal Attraction. I know it's a deep cut.
That
but
does not count.
They were a fan of James Cameron, but no, it doesn't count because it's too deep a cut. Many people won't know that. But with this, yes, it's very, very evocative of Ripley exiting the elevator. But I, honestly, I don't mind it. I mean, we'll have to see the context in the film. The proto pulse rifle is kind of interesting there. It has a white look. Again, kind of reminds me of some of the weaponry in Alien Isolation, like the white shotgun. And of course, just your white alien flamethrower you have as well. So, yeah. And I don't know. It looks cool and spooky. And we'll have to see if it feels too... We'll have to see how the sequence plays out. If it feels too much like Ripley creeping towards the hive, you know? If it's just this little moment that's kind of evocative, then I personally don't have an issue with it.
You see, I saw one interview where the director did acknowledge this is a, you know, it's based on that. So he knew, he was conscious of that when he filmed it. But to me, this is just, you know, she's stepping through smoke. She's holding a gun and she's saying, where are you? She is worried and concerned. And most of all, most importantly of all, she is on her own. I don't think the thing about homage is if it's distracting, it pulls you out of it. Yeah, this, it's not distracting. It's just got similarities. I think this is just going to be, you know, someone who's armed kind of stalking through. And I don't get the sense she's hunting. I think she's worried about something closing in on her, maybe. So can't really judge it.
No,
I think it looks cool. There's a lot, the hell of a lot of smoke. So all that steam does remind me of the Auriga in Alien Resurrection. That was just one big smoky shit.
Rob agrees with you in the chat. You know, he got Ripley 8 vibes. Sarah's saying Alien 3 vibes with the Ripley short sleeves, but not the hair.
And there is someone bald in this, wasn't there? I think it was the person.
Yes, Eileen Wu's character. Yeah.
So another one.
I like this pulse rifle, this predecessor pulse rifle. Let's be honest. Covenant's attempts at futuring up an AUG were piss poor. And Prometheus's plasma weaponry was boring as flip. I actually like to see the effort.
When you say boring, what do you mean? Just
as in they're visually boring.
Okay.
They just look like regular standard weapons. There's no real focus on them, so you can't get a sense for their design in Prometheus and Covenant. Yeah, it definitely seems more intriguing here. Another thing to note on the elevator there, I don't see an elevator cab, and the gate is open. So
it potentially looks like stairs. Ladders, sorry, not stairs. Ladders there, so emergency ladders in a lift shaft. But sorry, stop distracting me. I want to talk about the pulse rifle. I really like that it looks like a pulse rifle. It looks like an early version of the pulse rifle. You know, it looks early in that it looks awkward to handle, as in it's like a prototype kind of build of it. But it's quite clearly got a lot of that visual language. Again, visual continuity. There's design aesthetic in there. With like the carry handle.
I was thinking it's got electric cables running down the side. And I know in one interview, the director did talk about this, and he said it's an early version of pulse technology. Now, we've never had from James Cameron a clarification of what the hell pulse actually meant for pulse rifle.
It's supposed to be.
There are a number of different things over the years. So I'm guessing it's based on that.
I think the tech manual was the one that elaborated on it, you know, the Colonial Marines technical manual. And pulse was the method in which we should have got a gun nut American on it, not just a liberal Adam.
What are you talking about? I'm a gun owner. I go to the range.
Okay. You know, the way in which like the cartridge is ignited and the gunpowder is ignited and propelled out. Pulse is the way process is initiated. I can't really think of the right words. Yeah. It's the way that the gunpowder, whatever's inside it, is the reaction, the catalyst is initiated and pushes it out.
You know, whatever it is, the cables are going to be what makes the sound effect. Just going to get that. Because it's one thing having the pulse rifle, but what people are really going to respond to is the sound, the classic sound. Because you imagine if she fires the pulse rifle and it will sound just like an M4 or something, you want it to have that chunky sound. Yeah. So as long as they've got that there, that's what matters.
I would like to think he's going to have futured it up in the sound design department or mixed it up a little bit more, which is nice. Rob says it's the Nerf edition. I'm taking that as a bit of a slag off. Robbie, you're not liking it.
Didn't Fide mention in one of his interviews that the eventual pulse rifle, he said, is created by some general? And I'm like, is he referencing that anthology book?
The short story.
So he knows, like, is he actually referencing that? Is that what it's about?
Buck Potentially. I don't remember, or it could be the tech manual as well. I never made it all the way through. It's dry. It's so dry. I can't finish that. That book, but
I'm the only one.
One of the short stories in Bug Hunt, you know, it is presented as if it's like a Discovery Channel kind of historical look at the development of the pulse rifle, and I don't think it's necessarily a general, but it's supposed to be like developed or perfected by infantrymen who know how shit the earlier versions were. And perfected it to be this iconic mainstay of the Clone of Marines armament. I haven't seen that interview, Adam. So if he is referencing that, that's actually quite, again, endearing.
It's what you posted.
Was it in that caption?
So, you know, so long as it's not the Wayland Storm rifle that can take out a satellite from the ground or whatever it was, they released that for Prometheus.
It's not in the caption I shared.
Really? Yeah, well, I'll find it later.
I don't know where you found that, but yeah, be very curious to see that. And Sarah says, love me some visual homages. It feels like I'm back in a familiar place, but I don't know what's coming. Makes the earlier films feel new again.
Yeah.
So a different perspective.
As long as it's not too blatant a copy and paste thing, it's just...
Rob says, no, he's not having a dig. It looks decent. So we've made it nearly all the way through this trailer without a glimpse of the alien itself, and then it ends with a very quick inner jaw action, and I'm glad we got that minuscule 1-2 second little look at the film's alien.
You know, the certain fans would be up in arms going, oh, they haven't got an adult alien in this if they hadn't done that. But you get some jaw on skull action. So.
Oh. That was the same thing with the Covenant teaser as well. We only saw that alien at the very end of the teaser in the shower scene.
And, well, no, didn't... Oh, in the teaser. Yeah, okay, it was the full trailer where we got what would eventually become another one of those money shot.
Of him on the
on
lifter.
The lander. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And it was it was in your compilation. I sent it to you.
No, but did I post a quote of it?
Yeah.
Where's this?
I sent it to you on Facebook Messenger.
It's not in the bit where it's talking about the pulse rifle.
I'd just say a lot of fans have been saying it's really refreshing. Now, I don't know. It could just be the lighting. But people have been commenting about it does look also on the, unfortunately, design poster, like the alien has been given back its metal teeth again.
Yes. Yes. You see it in the poster. And yeah, okay, Adam, I do see it. Yes, it says buy this general. Apparently, it's my skim reading.
But yeah, the alien in Covenant had clear teeth, didn't it?
Yes.
Okay. So that's good to see a return to that.
What did they have in Aliens? In Aliens, I kind of remember.
They were
transparent. The Queen had sort of metallic. Transparent teeth.
The Queen had transparent, but I think they still kept the metallic stuff all the way through Resurrection, didn't they? I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sorry, I don't know. We'll do a segment on alien teeth another time.
But we don't, you know, we don't really get a good shot of the alien, but it's nice that it's in there. The glimpse
I'm
in
happy
it looks
about
good.
That.
But
I
we
don't
do
want to see the big alien yet until the.
Well, I mean, we get a good look at it, or at least the lower part of the jaw in the trailer. Fucking idiot. In the teaser poster.
Yes.
What do you think about the teaser poster?
Lazily designed like the Covenant
one. Really? I really like it. I mean, yes, I get the comparison to the Covenant poster. I've also seen a comparison to one of the Shin Godzilla posters that's just kind of the lower part of Godzilla's jaw with this mostly just red poster. So I like it. I honestly like it more than the Covenant teaser poster. But it's a bit evocative for sure.
I think there's a bit too much negative space at the bottom, I'll be honest, but I do like the intent and the design of, you know, just seeing this tiny part of the alien with this also very iconic feature of the alien, which is that drool, you know, that viscous mucus coming down. And we get a nice lot of detailing around the lower part of the jaw as well.
We've got the mouth tendons, the drool
tendons.
And
we've got the, transparent, and thicker looking ones than I remember some of the later incarnations being.
Unfortunately, we probably will get spoiled with action figure previews. They're gonna be out there at some point, so we will see the alien design at some point.
But I want the poster out. I want it up, you know, above me on the walls. I have to this day still got. I still think it's perhaps one of the better posters, even if it's not representative of the film. But, you know, like that Fallen Angel poster from Covenant, where you've got like all the, Adam, you're muted, where you've got all the engineers being crawled upon by aliens. And
oh, I love that one.
Yeah. I was just agreeing with you. That's one of my favorite alien posters of all time. I have that one framed. So, agreed.
So I'd like to get that one up on the walls. It'd have to replace my AVPR Japanese poster, but I think it's worth it.
Is that the one with the yellow writing on?
Yes. The AVP 2, yeah.
It looks very, very Eastern, yeah, in design, yeah.
Rob Harvey agrees with you. It's very reminiscent of the Covenant trailer. Poster. And I agree. And I see the similarities in terms of it just being an alien shrouded in darkness and it being a very minimalistic look at the creature. But
I like minimalism when it's symbolic minimalism, or they disguise body parts to look like something else, and then you look at it from a distance, so you go, oh yeah, that means that. Like, but it's just the lower jaws and drool, and to me
it's a bit boring for you.
You could have been more creative. Like, it's a generic poster, But it's because it's compared with a trailer which is this good. So in a way, it's a compliment to the trailer. It doesn't match what the trailer does. If it had been a match for how creative and symbolic the trailer was, yeah, but it's much more generic than the trailer itself was. But the trailer, I'm really happy with. The only people I've seen complaining about are the people that say, oh, you know, he's going to drop the ball. Now, there are people making predictions in lieu without knowing anything about the story. I like what the trailer did, and I'm looking forward to it because of it. It's nice to have an Alien exclusive project where most of fandom is going, oh, yeah, actually, yeah, maybe it's not dead, which we've always been saying on this. Ridley Scott, the beast, is not cooked. Maybe this is showing you, well, Mr. Scott.
I mean, not Covenant. Isolation proved that long ago.
Yeah. But he didn't, you know, anything about, but it was a video game. I don't get the sense he ever.
I know, but I mean that, I mean that more in terms of a, you know, I still respect Ridley, but
yes, yes,
he talks some bullshit these days. And that is one of the, you know, pieces of bullshit. But Fede's obviously the isolation influence in this, you know, in Romulus in the teaser is in there. And we know that. And something we haven't talked about, which we need to bring up, is some of the comments that Fede said about the creature effects on Romulus. And he's basically said he went and got, I mean, we know this to some degree anyway, don't we? The talent that was involved. You know, we've got Weta, we've got Legacy, we've got whatever, Alec Gillis. Yeah, Studio Gillis. I forgot what the company became then.
And they got the guy who did sculpted the Alien Queen's head involved in this, which I found was,
well, they, wow. He works for, in that Shane Mahan, something like that. He works for Legacy.
Also, apparently the ship at the beginning is a miniature because Mike Cremar Boards sent me on Instagram Pro Machina, I guess. They posted the trailer, and so I assume they're doing the ship miniatures.
Maybe so that's an assumption as well.
Yeah, it's an assumption, but we know they're involved somehow, and they do miniatures, so.
Okay.
Well, don't forget, Covenant had physical things on set, but they used them to gauge lighting to replace with CGI, so yeah, it could be that as well.
Well, let's just talk a little bit about let's read his comments out. So this is Fede talking to, I think it was Games Radar, but he said variations of this in pretty much all the interviews. So just like anybody else, I've been appalled by bad CG in movies that have ruined my, sorry, Adam just sent me that and distracted me there. They've ruined my experiences of it, but I'm not against it. I think you have to do whatever's best for the shot and whatever technique does it better, you should do. We went to crazy extents in this movie to do things practically. We had Weta Workshop doing a lot of the face huggers. And not only that, we brought back the guys that worked on Aliens. Shane Mahan, Shane, who sculpted the Queen's head himself, was the one in charge of building all the xenomorphs for our movie. So Shane is at Legacy.
Multiple aliens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's confirmation straight there that, well, I mean, that could...
It could be different iterations of one suit or something. It sounds like all the aliens, unless he's also doing the face huggers, maybe possible.
No, I don't think so. With them specifically calling it wet there. And when I say build, we built them. We did full animatronics for all the creatures in the movie. It was one of the best experiences in my career, just to see these guys that I admire so much back working together. There were moments when we'd need 9 puppeteers to make a creature work, and you had all of these guys now in their 60s under the table. And I'm there with them because there's not enough hands. I got to be under the table puppeteering these things with the guys that worked on the original Aliens. So that's been the best part. Not the original Fede. Come on, this is the second iteration. And then CG just comes when you really go, oh, if we do something here, we could do something really cool that the puppets never could. And you go there. But we really tried and we really succeeded. So, I mean, I do think the facehugger shots in the trailers are obviously CG.
They have to be because of what they're doing in it.
And I don't think that's a bad thing. I actually quite like what I saw of the facehuggers in here.
I mean, basically, these comments, if you go back to, 2004, I think it was, they mirror exactly what Paul Anderson was saying. Except
that's throwing this in a bad light.
No. It's the same approach, but this has a much bigger budget and it has much more professional people involved in the effects. You know, it was just, it was hampered by the limitations, but it's the same stuff. He was talking about you augment the practical where you need to, and you have to find that perfect balance. So it is the same methodology, but I think here there's more of a chance of it going right, because that even in AVP, there are definitely shots where you go, yeah, that looks fake. And I don't think here we're going to get something where you go, that looks fake.
I think the CG in AVP didn't hold up terribly great, let's be honest. No.
But neither did the some of the practical suit work either, unfortunately. Like the alien where it just scrabbles on the floor like a beetle upturned.
It's a little bit that's performance and direction as well, though. But Rob Harvey says, I wonder if this means there's no one inside the suits. That's a good question. Is it all animatronics?
I mean, it could. But we got an animatronic queen. It's fully animatronic queen in
AVP.
And animatronic was adults.
Yes.
And one of the adults was animatronic, yeah. And they built an animatronic pred alien baby car. They didn't get used, if I remember rightly.
We also know, thanks to the credits of the teaser, we know who's going to be doing the music of this film. And that is Benjamin Wallfisch. And I believe he co-composed the Blade Runner 2049 score with Hans Zimmer. He's also done other horror films such as the recent It films, Invisible Man, and Annabelle Creation. So I really enjoyed the score for Covenant by
Jed Kurzel.
Jed Kurzel, that's right. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing what Benjamin does with this one.
We've never had a returning composer for an alien film, have we?
I don't think so. I don't think ever. Yeah.
No. There was some comment that Fede made about the score. Let me just bring it up. We can't. So this was an interview with a Spanish outlet. And so this is translated. So we get the awesome European title here. We can't talk about Alien, the Eighth Passenger without thinking about Jerry Goldsmith's score. Who composed the soundtrack for Alien? Romulus. So this is Fede replying now. The composer is Benjamin Wallfisch, who worked with many of my colleagues and whom I greatly admire. He is responsible for the music of Blade Runner 2049. He worked with Lee Whannell on the incredible soundtrack of The Invisible Man. And he worked with my friend Andy Muschietti on both its. He's someone very talented, but I also think he's one of the most alien-loving people I've ever met. And as I do when I enjoy constantly quoting other films, he does the same with the music. He has a very specific sound. There are also musical references here and there from many of the original songs, but that obviously means tracks. I am a little wary, I'll be honest of that. I think Jed Kurzel managed to weave in Goldsmith's sort of original motifs reasonably well without making it feel overpowered, because Kurzel had a very unique identity with the Neomorph related tracks, you know, like the birth scene and the Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, Lost World scene. You know, so Covenant has its own identity while still maintaining these callbacks to Goldsmith. Covenant's soundtrack is actually my second favorite, I'll be honest. Alien 3 and Covenant. So I'm always a little weary about those callbacks and those homages. I hope it's done in a way that makes it feel just a part of the world without being overly reliant on them. And him, Fede, you know, saying about Wallfisch having a very specific sound, I found encouraging as to him being able to pull off that same sort of balance that Kurzel did for Covenant.
Yeah. You know, it'll be interesting to hear what he does. Hopefully we get some physical releases of the soundtrack. I'm sure we will. So
we'd have got Praise never came out on disc, did it? You got the vinyl.
Yeah, I got the vinyl. I don't know. Did it have a physical disc release?
I was needing it and it never happened. So.
I got the disc
vinyl only. Yeah. But yeah, with the practical effects to digital, I think we saw a pretty good balance in Prey. I know some people were thinking they could have toned down the CG on Feral Predator's face a little bit more, because we saw a lot of those comparisons between practical face animatronic next to the CG, and a lot of people were saying the practical looked better. So we'll see. Obviously, the Thing prequel is always the worst example of overdoing the CG, replacing the practical. But as long as there's a good balance here, it's interesting that we have so many different effects studios working on this, between, you know, three effects studios for the creatures, as well as the miniatures. And I guess we'll see who's doing the CG effects as well. But it's interesting to see all those collaborative efforts.
You mentioned Prey. I think it is worth pointing out here, there was, I forget where, but I did see one interview where it was confirmed that they were originally planning to release this just on streaming, just like Prey. And they said during production, the studio said, no, we'll release it theatrically.
It was before they started filming, yeah. Hmm. Fede doesn't specifically call out Prey as being the reason behind that, but I think we all know. I think we all know it was.
Yeah.
Because the huge response that Prey had after release.
I mean, if it hadn't been, we might still be facing similar voices as were then, with they don't have faith in it. But Prey showed it was a good film, so this could have had the same fate. But we will see this on the big screen, which will be very. When we saw Prey, even the people who weren't too keen on it, I think they agreed that some of the shots were worthy of being on the big screen. And we can see there are some great shots in the trailer alone for this. Yeah. I think they're going to be really have power on the big screen when we see it.
I'm very much looking forward to that. Fortunately, I did get to see Prey on the big screen because I was at the gala show and over here. And Adam was obviously the Comic Con. Was it Comic Con?
Yeah.
NYCC?
Yeah, I saw it again last summer with a double feature with with the original Predator. So I was able to see it twice, which is cool. But yeah, this one we can see in theaters as many times as we want. So that'll be nice.
I tend to do them, I think it's three times is what I've done all of them. So I just hope this one's great. I really do. I hope it pays off. And also, Eric talked about cinemas. If you've got a Cineworld near you, Cineworld's showing Predator on the 3rd or 4th of April, pretty much all the Cineworld chains. And that's also for all our UK listeners as well. Check it out on the Cineworld website. And I just wanted to call out something interesting, another comment from Fede's interviews. So he was asked about the youth of the characters. Say that like 20s is massively youthful. It's
right
for us, it is now.
talking about Kaylee's age, who plays Rain Carrigan, I think it was Carradine, something like that. We did get her proper name in the
Carradine or something like that, yeah.
I posted it in the board somewhere.
Yeah, the characters call her Rain. Apparently, her full name is meant to be Rains with an ES at the end. Yeah,
I'm not sure I see the point of that.
Yeah,
not
somebody said on the forums. Oh, is it related to the Alien 3 character spelled differently? Yeah, it could have been interesting, but it would have been superfluous.
That's too much fan wank.
It's Rains, but they pronounce it Rain in the things.
Yeah. So talking about what Fede said, you know, he acknowledges, yes, she's a younger character. All the characters are very young. I still sort of roll my 20s is not very young. Although it is to us.
How old was Lambert and Ripley struck?
They were early 20s, yeah. Early to mid 20s.
Maybe Kane. Although Dallas was
Kane and older, Dallas and Parker and Brett, obviously,
Yeah, it's nothing new.
No.
I'm pretty sure a lot of Marines they wouldn't have been like late 30s or something.
They'd have been like late 20s.
Nothing new, really.
It's not terribly far off. But the thing I'm getting at here is the other bits of the quote. So them being younger, that was inspired by the beginning of the extended cut of Aliens. There's a shot that really inspired the whole story, where you can see all the kids running around the corridor on Hadley's Hope. I always thought, wow, what would it be like for those kids to grow up in a terraforming colony that still needs another 50 years to be habitable? You're probably going to take the same job as your parents. What's the hope? I thought, wouldn't it be great to catch up with these characters, not exactly these characters, but that type of young kid growing up in a Weyland-Yutani shake-and-bait colony, I love him using the language there, and see how their life would be when they reach their early 20s. What do they want out of life? Do they want to stay there and do what their parents did, work the mines, work the farms, and that's it? Or do they want more out of life? That's what kickstarted the whole journey of this character, Rin, I assume he's talking about there. It was something I was always fascinated with. Maybe it's because I'm from Uruguay, and the idea of growing up in a place where you know how far you can get and the things that can happen there and the things that will never happen there. So at the time, I always connected with those characters. I love this. I absolutely fucking love this. Because that must be a universal identifiable thing. Obviously, Fede's got a very specific example there. But, you know, how the fuck I ended up in the position I'm in, I have no fucking idea. I didn't go into life wanting to do the job I do. I purposefully avoided my career when I was trying to decide what to do in college. But here I am. So this idea of satisfaction of your future, satisfaction of what you're doing, I love it. You know, that's the kind of thing I really enjoy of characters in the expanded universe, self-identity, self-satisfaction. That is pure real life realism, identifiable characters in the way that the blue collar kind of thing is. You know, how many of these blue collar characters are satisfied with their lot in life? And here we have characters that are struggling with that and seemingly making a choice to do something about it.
Yeah, it's very much that pioneer spirit, because you do. I mean, it was originally a deleted scene, the special edition, see this. And it is very much like it's a futuristic version of how those kind of Wild West towns would have been back in the day. But it is interesting that this director, I think he co-wrote the whole script as well, but he does
a co-writer with a regular partner.
He has personal experience in his background. He came from one of those kind of places of what he's saying in the modern day. So he can very much, he says he latched onto it. He went from that perspective of, well, what would that kind of person think like? It's not just a character who has that as a plot point. It's how would they actually feel about, where would that mentality take them? And of course, how would that affect them in a high stress situation like they're going to face too?
That was something he mentioned as well.
It's interesting that he's got the relatability to it.
He did this was something I was a little worried about. But, you know, he mentioned youth affecting the decisions they make. And I'm hoping that doesn't mean we get stupid horror cliche.
We've had enough of that in the prequels.
Sort of decision making.
If it's rash, like if you're under the gun, if you're saying that it's coming through the door. What I liked about Covenant, my favorite thing was that backburster thing where the stress is building. It's built and all the protocols, they're falling down. And I love that. It was the best scene in the entire film for me. And it felt like that is something a person, even though they got training, they can screw up. It's like that scene in Species where they're trying to grow the thing and then somebody screws up, the screw falls down on the floor and they're trying to get out from the grating. And all the while it's growing in the tank and it's building. But something like that, totally relatable. It heightens the stakes. It makes the tension greater. If he's going to do that, great. But if it's just going to be, there's the space cobra. Oh, come on. We're all going to roll our eyes. We're going to groan. And we're going to say, I thought we got past this. It could go two extremes. If it's the relatable aliens kind of way, do that. That could add to it, not detract.
But I also like, again, it's showing awareness of the wider franchise, to specifically call out the character journey of people in those situations. I love it.
It's going back to the Nostromo crew, where a lot of people relate to them because, they're truckers or they're just doing the job and
mundane jobs.
Parker is and Brett a bit like they have like how long will it take? It take this long and they give another answer upstairs and you go, they're bullshitting just to give them some extra time. And it's all relatable. And even the Marines, you have the poster saying this time it's war. And it could have been so easy to do that macho bullshit thing. But you know, they're in the mess hall. They're bitching about, when are we going to get to see combat? Oh, we're just going to, it's going to be dumbass colonists. We're always facing technical glitches. They want to use their training and they never get to do it. And it makes them just like, yeah, that's a situation I could believe I do or my grandkids do, because it's a relatable thing through history. You go back into the ancient world and you look at personal correspondence from like ancient Rome and ancient Egypt. People were bitching about the same stuff they do now. It's just they're not talking about the internet, or but even like celebrities and they're talking about, they talk about that then too. It's through history, all this stuff. You can make a character who has contemporary concerns, I mean, ways that go, yeah, you know what? Yeah, bang on. I'm with that. It's what makes that deleted scene in Aliens where, like, Simpson and Lydecker, we don't ask because it takes so long to get an answer, and the question is always don't ask. And it's, you could tell James Cameron, he was a trucker. He put that stuff in there because he's probably had that kind of dialogue in real life. And you have someone watch it today and they're going to be like, yeah, my boss, they said that last week or something. If we can get that, yes. We want that. We don't want the elite scientists. We want people that, like, they were just on their way and they got... It's always in the RPG scenarios we face, right? It's always like, we're on our way home. Oh, damn it. It's got... The shuttle's been delayed and then things happen and then you always get attacked by a facehugger. But
That's another reason I was kind of excited to see the facehuggers in this. I was like, it's like living out an RPG scenario, and I'm one of those characters on there. You know, I'm playing Eileen Wu's character in an RPG scenario.
Yeah. Only thing, it didn't whip someone with a tail, but aside from that.
That's funny. No, I agree with you. I do really hope it plays out in that sort of realism angle, and I feel like it's going to.
That is what made them classics that you can rewatch over and over again. Without that, it becomes a straight A to B chase sequence.
It's a very real world.
The relatability, that's what makes you care for the characters. Yeah. It's not about, you know, when people say, oh, it was written with heart. It's not written with heart, but it's written with relatability, and the people are reacting to things in believable ways. There weren't characters necessarily reacting to things in believable ways in Prometheus. There are debates about that, but by and large, they become tropes, they become memes, and it becomes something it's mocked for.
Mm-hmm.
This has stuff that people relate to as opposed to create memes about in the internet age. That's good. That's what we're going to hope for. That's what the trailer seems to be giving us, but we'll see with the dialogue, with the downtime scenes.
Yeah. Adam, did you want to talk about that at all?
No, I think, I mean, going back to the kind of everyday situations that we had in those original films and how those characters felt like they were going from that thrust into these survival situations, I think we're going to see more of that here. We had a bit more of that with Covenant than we did with Prometheus. And I don't know, scientists can be interesting too, right? Like, we had that in AVP, but
that's another one of those fun things as well, is like the scientists reacting to scientists on like YouTube. And you've got other scientists going, yeah, I know dumbasses like that in the lab.
Yeah. So, and the fact that they're younger, it didn't even really feel like it in the trailer. And honestly, it's the same thing with Prey. Like, I think it's easy to empathize with younger characters because at some point, you know, we were that age. And not to mention, it could also bring in a whole new generation of fans that empathize with these characters as well.
And it's not even that young, really.
Yeah, it's like Evil Dead 2013. It was a very young cast. I think even Ripley in the original was in her early 20s, right? Or mid-20s or something like that.
Something around that. We did the calculations when they were announcing the cast members, and you had all these fucking internet goons going complaining about the age of them, and people went and had a look.
It's a teen movie. It's not High School Musical, no.
Yeah.
So it was comparable. It was comparable ages of the cast.
Yeah. Don't forget also, I think when people talk about youth, it's like in Alien, there's some young characters, but they've been through things. You can have people who've aged up fast just because they've been through the daily grind. They don't have to have been. These could have been people who they've, like, they're on their, like with Hudson, right? Hudson bitches because he says, oh, I got, what is it, one more of these and then I'm out. Because he
one
was
more
on,
week, man. One yeah, more week.
That was his backstory. And there are people, they sign up to the military they're on a contract. It was that kind of thing.
Sign up to get a college education, isn't that the thing in America, yeah, Adam?
That kind of thing, right? And so you could have these characters, yeah, like 20s or whatever, but they've gone through, they're on their like their 10th voyage or whatever. They've been loading up or maybe you don't know what these characters do in their everyday, but we haven't got specifics about their jobs. So these, it's about how much experience, life experience, right? Common sense. If you've watched the comedy show Frasier, you always had Frasier as the psychologist and his brother. They all pomp and circumstance, and it was his old man, the police officer, that always brought it down to earth. You've got that kind of blue collar stuff. That's what you need. It won't matter that they're in their 20s, whether mid, early, or late. You can have someone who's got life experience. That's going to be what makes it relatable.
I'm also excited to see the colony itself because we haven't had that setting since Aliens, really.
Yeah.
I mean, except for the video
Gestation?
Games.
But,
well, they depart the colony to go to.
We won't get into plot too much,
but I think that was in just the basic plot that they shared, that they're young colonists. So, you know, goes to follow. But yeah, seeing that setting, like you said, Aaron, a shake and bake colony, seeing that operational and not just the aftermath of something. We got it a bit in the special edition of Aliens, and I think Fide talked about that, wanting to see more of that.
I hope we get to see the processor in the background.
That would be cool.
Put the atmosphere processor.
Yes. Just again for that visual continuity.
Yeah. Would it even look the same? Because it's a bit earlier than... Might look a bit...
They manufacture those, by the way.
Yeah. Remember, they've been colonizing for decades.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, that would have been that model. Maybe, hang on, Hadley's coat, that hope, how long had that been around? They said it's been around for decades, so maybe Hadley's hope was already in its infancy.
Yeah, because people there for 20 years, so... Mm. Yeah,
it would be around. So maybe that they're just settling when this happens. Rob Harvey in the comments says if the young characters are second generation colonists, you'd imagine they'd be quite competent at life in general on the space station or wherever the setting is. And yeah, absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Because they faced hardship. You go to Africa, you get little teenage kids, because they can be like child soldiers or whatever. They've seen some stuff, man. They're gonna be you had Naru was her name in Prey.
Yeah.
I mean she had a similar thing. She wasn't new to life. So, I agree. It'd be interesting to see an atmosphere processor. But would that feel, as long as it doesn't feel too fan service, it's like there for a reason. Yeah.
Yeah. So just one more thing I want to mention before we can let Adam run off, because I know he really wants to for his awful schedule. And so Tyler in the comments here says, I'm interested in how some of the world-building convos between Fede and Cameron went, especially the bug hunt line, which apparently Fede has an answer to but didn't reveal in the interviews. But there's more. I just want to mention that I can't remember if we knew this. I feel like we did, but it wasn't really publicized. But Fede talked to both Scott and James Cameron while working on the film. Obviously, he talked to Scott because Scott's the one that remembered the pitch and went, do you want to come still make that film? And
apparently he's known Cameron for years, he said, before this, which I thought was interesting.
It was through his connection with Stephen Lang, because Stephen Lang was the bad guy
Don't Breathe. He was going to play Hicks, wasn't he? Stephen Lang.
No, it's the other way around, isn't it? Didn't Michael Biehn audition for the Quaritch? That's his character in Avatar.
Yeah, but apparently Stephen Lang was almost... He was on like the shortlist to play Hicks. I'm sure I read that, and it was that was what the irony of something I've read. I'll have to
look. I thought it was the Avatar thing was the connection there.
Yeah, but I thought as well. Go on.
I think it's really curious, and it's especially interesting here because in the quotes, you know, in the interviews, Fede talks about them having completely different reactions or completely different concerns or comments, you know, on the script, on the film, because you know, Fede talks about showing them both, obviously, and they wouldn't repeat a note is whatever he said. Whatever Ridley said, Cameron said something different. They were all super smart comments, notes and thoughts on film and filmmaking, etc. But both of them had completely different approaches. So as an alien nerd making a film, that must be fucking awesome for him to be talking to these two, not only filmmakers of the defining films of the genre of the franchise, but titans of filmmaking as well. And to hear him confirm that, yes, they obviously completely different sort of mentalities and concerns, I think is really fucking cool. I think he's going to have, I think Fede's going to have some cool specific stories to tell later on when it comes to specific story notes and what have you. And I can't wait to hear those.
It also makes you wonder, did he pick up any hints of what, because if you remember back in the day, Cameron,
when they were going to do an Alien 5.
Cameron was the guy who was writing, it was going to be one wrote one for first.
Yeah, Cameron wrote Ridley would direct.
Yeah, yeah, so it makes you wonder, did they discuss some of, were some of those, are some of those going to get brought into this?
Well, we'll have to remember that to ask Fede if we ever get him on the show.
I think this is going to be the closest we get to that convergence, because they would have both been influences. He would have been able to talk to them in person. So I think this is the closest we get to how that might have been flavor-wise.
Well, I think you'd have probably got a little bit of that Blomkamp thing, because Ridley was also going to produce.
Definitely.
You know, Ridley is the de facto alien producer at the time.
Yeah. Of course, he's doing the producing duties on this.
Yeah, and he would have on Blomkamp's.
Well,
we took it out.
Yeah, I think we've had a thorough examination of that trailer. Didn't quite
not
go
quite
for
3 hours.
Yeah, 3 hours that we did with Covenant. But thank you for watching or listening to our live chat right now. I think we've had more engagement with the live chat from our Patreon supporters than we've ever had in one of these podcasts before. So thank you for joining us, and we very much appreciate that. Anything else, Aaron, before I do the
plugs here?
So you can find us on our main hub of activity, our website, avpgalaxy.net. We're also on all the major social channels, Facebook, X, Instagram, and Threads. Again, a big thank you to our Patreon supporters. We have a few new patrons this month. Tyler White at the Praetorian Elder tier, and Darren, also at the Praetorian Elder tier. And for the Facehugger,
we're on here as well.
Oh, did we?
Yeah. On the Facehugger tier, though, I think. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, let me look. Oh, okay. Steve Spires just joined today. So thank you very much.
To watch this, I believe, actually, as we were doing
we
it.
We appreciate
live.
That. And also on the Facehugger Youngblood tiers, we have Leonel Ortega Valdez. Hope I'm saying that right. And Andrew Berger. So thank you very much to our new patrons. We very much appreciate your support.
Indeed. If you want to follow me personally on Twitter, I'm @_CorporalHicks.
If you'd like to follow me personally, it's @Ridgetop21 on both X and Instagram. Eric is still...
Yeah.
Someday he'll drop his social media.
End of the month. It's I'm videoing things, yes.
But a very exciting time for us right now. We are eating good, folks, between this and the development of another Predator films and the production of new Alien series, video games in the works. There's a lot coming. Yeah, so
we have confirmation of Servio still working on their VR thing, which is nice. Little tiny non-news piece of news, but it's nice to know it's not been abandoned. Which
so
is good.
Still hoping for a jam-packed Alien Day, but we'll see, and we'll be reporting on whatever we find out with this movie or anything else. So
yeah, I fully expect we'll probably get a bigger trailer on
that
Alien Day.
Cool. I would like
to. Do we yet know if there's going to be a comic or book adaptation of this film? We've not had any word.
We don't know. No. I kind of expect there to be a novel.
Prometheus didn't have, I think, didn't Prometheus had a Japanese novelization.
It did.
I think
that I believe Clara's working on translation. Yeah.
It's already just done, I think.
Oh, okay. Covenant got Alan Dean Foster's novelization. Prey did not get one, unfortunately. So we'll see with this if it gets one.
I feel like we will. I don't think Titan tends to waste Alien. You know, they very much wasted Predator.
It's the only license they still got. So
Titan no longer has the license to do Predator or AVP books, but they still have Alien as far as we know. Hopefully they don't waste the opportunity and they do a novel, but obviously we'll learn that. We'll learn that
later. A comic adaptation. When was the last time we had a comic adaptation?
Predators
films.
Predators.
But those were spin-off stories.
There was an adaptation that went with those, yeah.
Thank you for the Patreon chat, for joining us. Rob, Tyler, you know, thank you for calling us out, Sarah, as well. Appreciate the interactions and appreciate your appreciation in the chat. So thank you. If you made it to the end of this, like I said, this is going up with feckle editing. I apologize for overlaps of speech. I apologize for lip smacking in your ears. Pisses me off when I'm listening to other people's podcasts. So I get rid of it in this normally, but obviously I'm not today. So please bear with us for that rough one. We're not using your money to edit this. I'm sorry. We weren't anticipating this. But yeah, cool. Thank you everybody for watching or listening. This has been Corporal Higgs.
Rich Stop.
Xenomorphine.
Signing off.
Getting to the cryotube.
Yes. Or getting into the bloody cryotube.
Yeah.
Or getting out of the bloody cryotube. I don't want to be in there with all that fucking...
Just smearing it with our hands.
And we'll leave it at that. Thank you.